Hi, this is Terry Stewart, CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on one of my favorite shows, the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Bobby J, and you are truly blessed listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to have as my guest, singer, celebrated award-winning DJ, and a true pioneer and legend in our genre, Mr. Bobby J. How you doing, Bobby?
Mike, I'm doing good, but you swell my head with all those wonderful accolades there.
Well, you know, you've been there since day one, and you've been in everybody's home for years and years and years, and there are people, even though you don't know them, there are so many people out there that know you, and you know that to be true. I want to just get into Bobby for a minute. You were born where?
I was born in New York City. Born on what is now called Roosevelt Island.
Right, right.
Back then it was called Welfare Island.
Uh-huh.
Still a part of Manhattan, but now you need a tram to get to and from that island.
No, I hear you. When you were a kid, you know, our ears all found something to listen to. I know how it was for me. What did you listen to when you were a kid? What did you gravitate to as far as music was concerned?
A lot of it was Martin Block.
Right.
The Make Believe Ballroom and Al Jazbo Collins.
Right.
Mort Seeger.
Right.
Symphony Sid Torin.
Symphony Sid in the City. I remember.
Jumping with my boy Sid in the City.
The time is 10:32 as we return to Martin Block in the Make Believe Ballroom. Ready to continue from the Make-Believe Ballroom, reporting the 24 top records in the country to you. This is Martin Block in the Crystal Studio. We have the cash box list of best-selling records here in our hot little hand. And we have a lot of postcards around us. We're going to be handing out more Easter bouquets, so stick around. And number 22 last week, moving up to number 17, The Crests and Step by Step.
Jumping with my boy, see it in the city. Jumping with my boy, see it in the city. Mr. President of the DJ committee, we're gonna be up all night getting witty. We want you to spin the sounds by the witty. From down in the land that's real, real pretty. Make everything go real crazy over Jay-Z. Make everything go real crazy over Jay-Z. Play anything cool for me and my baby. We don't wanna think we're listening listening to Lazy. It's got to be Pressburg cheering all the Basie. The dial is all set right close to 80. Let her roll.
That's what I really listened to because, and then of course a little later on I was listening to people like Johnny Smalls, Dr. Jazz,
right.
Douglas Jocko Henderson,
right,
and of course Alan Freed.
Right. So it's interesting the way you answered that because, you know, when you ask somebody, so what kind of music were you into? What did you listen to? You know, you gave me all the names of the DJs, which just shows me where your head is at. You know, it's like you probably gravitated to that, you know, at a very early age. I know my parents, I was a Bronx kid. My parents used to drive up the Taconic and the Sawmill. And we drive up and, you know, they were always looking at houses and, you know, whatever. But I would fight with my parents to listen to certain tunes. And I always gravitated towards the R&B stuff. And I would ask them to change the channel. And I was only, you know, a little kid sitting in the back of the car with my brother. And
right.
I grew up knowing all the words to all the R&B tunes, and I don't know how they got in there, but they got in there. I, you know, a tune would come on, I'd find myself singing the whole tune, and I knew every lyric, and I guess that's what I gravitated to, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was interesting. Your parents were into music growing up?
Well, my family was a musical family in that my grandmother had her kids learn different instruments, piano. One of my aunts played the violin.
Right.
And in the extended family, we had musicians. We had Jimmy Powell, who was my mother's first cousin, my second cousin.
Wow.
He played during the war. He played with Count Basie and later was in the house band at the Apollo Theater. And I'm related to, through him, Lois Harris Powell.
Ah, good friend of mine. I love her.
She married Jimmy's son.
Wow.
Lois, of course, from the Chantels.
Hi, this is Lois Harris Powell from the Chantels. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
And then I had another cousin, a second cousin for me, who also played tenor saxophone.
Wow.
His name was Percy France.
Uh-huh.
And he started out with Bill Doggett.
Wow.
And after, I always tell a story about Bill Doggett.
Right.
He played with Doggett from like 1950 through 1956.
Right.
And he even had a record, I remember his name called, Percy Speaks.
Thank you.
But he went to Dolly and says, look, you know, I had a family and, you know, we're not doing that many gigs and I'm not making a lot of money, so I've got to quit. And he no sooner quit in 56.
Right.
They were doing a recording session. He was replaced in the group by a guy named Clifford Scott.
Huh.
And while they were goofing around, they did a little jam, and the engineer had the tape running, and that became Honky Tonk.
Right.
So I always talk about my cousin Percy was a day late and a dollar short.
Timing is everything, you know, but I always say,
sure,
you know how they say there are 6 degrees of separation? Well, in this genre, there's only either one or none, because it's a really great fraternity. And I always say, you know, I'm a small grain or a little pebble on the big, beautiful beach with all the talent.
Right.
But you know, there are big seashells and sandcastles and all kinds of goodies on the beach. But I'm glad just to be on the beach, you know?
Absolutely.
It's great, you know, as far as that's concerned. So when did you wake up? On what day did you wake up and realize that you could sing a really good song? When did that happen?
Well, I can't put a date on it. I do remember in 1955,
right,
a lot of us kids, as kids later on subsequently and still today play basketball.
Right.
With us it was singing. We discovered, I listened to while listening to the radio, I became aware of Sonny Phil and the Orioles, and
right,
I became aware of Jimmy Ricks and the Ravens, and 1951 is when I really fell in love with vocal group singing.
Right.
When at a party at an arts house in Brooklyn, they played this one record all night long called 60 Minute Man.
Right.
By the Dominoes, and I was captured. I couldn't get enough after then of rhythm and blues vocal groups.
Wow.
But by 1955, a bunch of us put a little singing group together, and we used to mess around with it, and we used to listen to songs by the Wrens,
right,
and the Crows, and that's how I learned to sing. Now, if you talk about when the light bulb went off and I decided this is what I was going to do,
uh-huh,
that would have been in January of 1956 when I first heard Why Do Fools Fall in Love,
gotcha,
by Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, and that's when I knew that this was going to be my life endeavor.
Right. And that's a good thing to base it on. I mean, you know, Herman lives here in Florida now, and I see him all the time.
I know.
And Jimmy I talk to all the time, you know, and Jimmy's a panic, you know. Jimmy, you know, whatever you can say in one sentence, Jimmy finds a way to say it in 10 sentences.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that I know.
Yeah.
Hi. If you haven't recognized my voice, let me tell you who I am. My name is Jimmy Merchant, original founding member of Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, the co-writer of Why Do Fools Fall in Love, our biggest hit. But your biggest hit is Mike Miller, and you're listening to him right now on the Harmony Street Show. Keep listening. And like I said, folks, you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
And so you found your way to the street corner, I'm sure. And what was the first street corner group? I'm sure it wasn't the Latins. I'm sure you had something before that.
No, Latins was the first group I recorded with.
Ah, so originally the Pastels, right?
We were originally called the Pastels.
Yeah.
And I was given a copy of a, I think it was a cash box.
Uh-huh.
Where they talked about Malcolm Mickey Newkirk signed the Pastels to his Central record label.
Right.
And it was not long after that we discovered that Big D Irwin had a group called the Pastels.
Right.
They were recording for Big Javelin. And so we had to come up with a new name and sitting around a table at the kitchen table at Earl and John Marcus's house. I don't remember exactly how, but we started talking about the Arabian Nights and blah, 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 and Aladdin and his magical lamp. And we said, wow, yeah, why don't we call ourselves the Latins? Because each one of us individually was a Latin.
Gotcha.
That's how that came about.
Gotcha, gotcha. Who were the original members in the Latins? Can you remember back that far?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Now, before the group that gained fame in the recording studio, Jimmy Keynes, who would later be back in the Latins, but was known for singing with the Demons and the Emersons, it was actually he and Earl Marcus who started the group. And then there was Sylvester Sonny Johnson and Johnny Dunmire, Hannibal Donaldell, and Leon Jenkins.
Right.
They were the group, and then they kind of split, and then John Marcus, Earl's younger brother, was in the group, and Ernest Mickey Goody, and myself, and after Sonny Johnson, because Sonny was with us through 1960, then a kid by the name of David Coleman, we called him Pinky, he came in the group, and that was the nucleus of the group until the group finally eventually broke up.
Yeah, well, you know, it always amazes me that when you talk to people about that, it's like everybody had a nickname, you know.
Oh, yeah, I don't know that. You have to.
Of course. Well, you know, just as a little aside, you know, I was a dean in the Bronx for about 30 years. You know, that was one of my careers. And I had Jimmy Key's sons.
Yeah.
I had Jimmy Jr. and Paul, and they weren't great kids. One was special ed and one was, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I used to have Jimmy in. And he would talk at career day, and he was always there, and he would come just into my office on an afternoon. He would come completely dressed to the nines with the sharkskin suit and the wingtip shoes and the whole thing. Because that was Jimmy. And I was going to take him at one time right towards the end to be on Johnny B's show up in Waterbury because I lived in Connecticut. You know, Harmony Street was in Connecticut. He passed away. We changed the date. And he passed away actually a few weeks before that, whatever. But I was very friendly with him, and I know that you knew him. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah,
he was
a great guy.
He was a very good friend, very very good friend. As was Carl Feaster,
right?
And Buddy McCrae,
right?
I love the Chord.
As a matter of fact. One day I called Don K. Reed. I said, "You want the Chords on?" He says, "Where are they?" He said, "Of course I'd like to have them on." So I actually hooked that up, you know, whatever, and they went because I think up to that point they hadn't been on, and that was probably in the early 90s, maybe, you know, but he was a real gentleman, you know. Now, the tune Did It. That was a Latin's tune, and of course, supposedly I read that was recorded in the back of a music store Is that true?
Back on, it was a store. It was like a grocery store. I remember there was one in the back of a music store. We didn't have that many music stores in Harlem at that time. But, that was the back of a store.
Wow. So, you know, that's...
Makeshift. Kind of makeshift.
Well, you know, one mic and everybody's got to find, you know, back off a little bit. And then you do it. Boom, boom, boom.
Oh, my darling, I love you so much. I really need you. I thrill to your touch when you kiss me. Chills run up my spine, oh my darling. You are my
without you, sweetheart, my heart would be in so much pain. For I'm in love, and you're to blame.
My baby, I love you so much. I really need you. I feel through your touch when you kiss me, baby. Children of mine, oh my darling. I love you, oh my darling.
This is my feeling. You have a lot of groups nowadays, and it's like, let's do a new tune. So they spent 6 weeks learning the tune. I said, you know, when I was a kid, we just chimed off and we sang it. I mean, there was no nonsense. You know, you chime off, you sing it. You know, what is this? Take 3 weeks learning the tune. That's, you know, the real groups, you know, that had it in their head, pretty much that's the way they did it, and I'm sure that's the way you did it.
There wasn't, particularly when we had to do sessions, we would, we rehearsed up at EJ's house.
Right.
And we got it, we would get it right. And they always used to get mad at me because I would never sing the bass part. Because I always did the bass part as it came to me in the studio. That goes to this day. I'm in a studio group called the Sons of St. Rocco. I don't know the three of us.
Right.
You know, with Phil Granito.
Oh, I love Phil.
And we've done two CDs in 09 and 10.
Uh-huh.
And we have enough material in the can for I think another one. But it was I would go to the studio.
Right.
And in the studio, as I'm listening to the playback of the tracks that are laid, that's when it comes to me. So the guys used to get angry with me, man. You know what I mean? Trust me. And then later on they stopped because they realized that I really kind of knew what I was doing. But no, we didn't take a lot of time to, because we were governed by the clock in those days.
Right.
And you had like maybe 2 hours or 3 hours at the most when you had to do three, four, maybe five different tunes.
Right.
So we would go in there pretty much prepared and just let it go. And of course, in those days, before the advent of multi-tracks, and we record live with the band,
yep.
And a lot of it was spontaneous.
Yeah.
It's because sometimes the guitar player would come up with a different riff.
Right.
And that would inspire the singers.
Oh, absolutely.
And of course, they don't do it like that anymore. And when you mentioned about, you know, the being in places and situations and studios that were, you know, not quite the equivalent of the great thing like the RCA studio on 44th Street, for
right.
example. But it's gone back to, because now we make records in our bedroom.
Right. Every kid has a CD, yeah. He's got Pro Tools and he's, you know,
that's
and he's
right.
and he's tweaking. And if he likes the chorus, he just cuts it and pastes it, you know, and auto-tunes it, and he's got a record.
Yeah, yeah.
I know what you mean. How I Hate to Go Home. What a great title for a tune.
that's our favorite song, I, Oh, How I Hate to Go Home.
Yeah, and that's funny because I think to myself, now, did that come from a true life experience, or was that...
The guy that's playing bass on the record, his name is Nicky Don, and he wrote that song and gave it to us, and we just loved it. You know,
yeah.
I think the lyrics are great. It's you can almost feel the maybe Nicky got kicked out of his house. I do not know, but you know. Oh, I ain't gone ever since my baby left me.
Right.
Got nobody waiting for me since my baby went away. I mean, it's great. Look, that is truly our favorite song.
No, that's very cool. There was once a time, you know, there were a lot
there
of Latin tunes,
time.
That was,
although we all take credit for writing it, it was really the aforementioned Jimmy Cain. Jimmy really wrote, we wrote the bridge, as I remember. He wrote the rest of the song.
There once was a time that could never go away. My friend, I'm gonna head up to the phone.
How I Hate to Go Home is pretty much your favorite Ladin's tune, huh?
Yes.
That's very cool. Now, at one point, you went into the military, right?
Yes.
Right, and that was, were the Ladin's still singing at that time?
Oh, yeah. The last record that I appeared on was on RCA had reactivated its Booth subsidiary, and we had a thing called That's What You Do to Me and Try Again.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, when that came out, we cut that in late 61. It came out in 62. And by the when the record didn't happen, because we really believed in it, by that June, I had enlisted in the Army. The first record post me was a thing called I'll Kiss Your Teardrops Away, and if you need me, I'll be there.
Right. So, as rumor has it, you got involved in doing some military sock hops, I guess, while you were in the service, and that's probably...
No, I didn't do any sock hops. I used to go to...
Oh, you used to go to the sock hops.
There was a disc jockey on station WTHB. His name was Billy Jean the Wild Child. He was Eugene Dedek. He was from Long Island.
I spent some time there, too.
Because, I loved my stint in the military.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in the military. I still operate my life in a military manner.
Thanks
to the military.
Wow.
But I was missing show business, so my off-duty hours, I gravitated toward anything that would come close to being in show business.
Uh-huh.
And so I used to go to record hops, sock hops, and I went to the hop, and I met Billy Jean, who I do not know if he was serious or not, but he said, and I told him, my background, said that he remembered the Ladin's, particularly, I think, he remembered the group, and we became friends, and I used to go to all his sock house, I used to carry his records.
Wow.
And it was he who ignited the interest in radio in me, because prior to that, my only interest in radio was listening to see whether they were playing my records or not.
Wow.
But he said to me, with your background, you know everybody in the business, and you've got a great voice. Have you ever thought about being on radio? And I said, no, not until that point.
Unbelievable.
And he then took me to the radio station, which is, you could do a movie about this. It was a 1,000-watt radio station in a house trailer under an overpass.
Uh-huh.
And introduced me to the general manager, and I started doing part-time, weekends.
Wow. So you carried his records, and he was like your mentor. You were kind of like the Johnny Zacchio of the military sock hops.
I was his apprentice, if you will.
I figured I'd throw that in there, you know, just to
get it.
I don't really have to ask you how you got into radio. That was your little springboard, you know.
That's how I got into radio. Yeah. I started, and for me, it became the twin love of my life because I already loved singing and performing, and now I have this other thing that I'm now passionate about called radio.
Right. And, you know, and there's a right way and a wrong way to do radio. And, you learn that as you go along. And of course, you know, with all the stations that you were on, I mean, you were on the best station. And I'm going to surprise you by what I'm going to say. And that was WWRL, which was the station, because that's where all the greats came from. I got a story. You know, I met Hal Jackson years ago, and a little aside, it was Harmony Street and a show at Rye Playland years ago, and Don Kay was there, and Hal was in the audience with his daughter. And I said to Don Kay, "Isn't that Hal in the audience?" And he goes, "Where?" And I saw. He says, "Go see if you can get him back here, you know, backstage." So him and his daughter came back, and I took a picture with Don and Hal and myself in the picture.
Right.
And then years later, Don told me the story. He said, when I was a kid, we went to the radio station on a field trip, and I had a chance to speak to Hal Jackson. I was a kid. And he whispered in my ear a few things, and he says, and that's what really got me into radio. So I blew up the picture, and I sent it to Don, and he's got a picture of me, Hal Jackson, and himself sitting on his mantle in his house on Long Island, and I'm saying to myself, well, that's great. I don't know how I got in the picture, but, you know, that's the tribute to Hal Jackson, who I always thought was, you know, such a great.
Well, Hal was all things to me. He was my mentor, my teacher, my brother, my father, my friend.
Wow.
Hal Jackson saw something in me way back when and took me under his wing, and I owe Hal everything.
Wow, that's amazing. And it was a big loss when he passed. So many greats were on that station. I mean, you know, growing up and listening, if there were people that never found that station and they were listening to the other AM stations or whatever, they really missed a lot, because that's where the good stuff came from. You know,
we were a general market station, although we were geared primarily toward the black or African American community.
We were
a general market station.
Right.
And working with people like Harry Harrison and Ron Lundy, and particularly Van Ingram, who told me, because we knew they had music meetings every week.
Right.
I think on Wednesdays. And our Soul 16 survey came up on Thursdays, and they knew the following Wednesday in their music meetings the songs that they were going to be voting on from WWRL, because those were the songs, when those songs reached our top 16, those are the songs that Rick Sklar would bring into the music meeting.
Wow.
So we had there was a crossover effect.
Oh yeah,
and in fact, Chuck Leonard.
Chuck
Leonard came from WWIN or even WEVB, one of those stations in Baltimore, and he got hired at RL. And everybody that started at WWRL worked the all night show.
Wow!
And one night, Dan Ingram said he was driving along, listening to WWRL because they listened to us. He does, because I want to know what I'm going to be playing on our station. And heard Chuck Leonard on at night. At the time, WABC was giving a lot of flack from, I think, the Urban League and, and the NAACP, because they were calling themselves the All-Americans.
Right, I hear you.
But there were no people of color on the air.
I gotcha.
and Dan said, I listened to this guy on WWRL, and the next day I told Rick Sklar, I got just the guy for you. You got to listen to this guy. And that's how Chuck Leonard got to WABC.
Wow, that's an interesting story. And, you know, but of course, you know, you paid your dues on a lot of stations, and you were on GLI, you were on WNGR, which was a great station, and all of that stuff. You know, you talk about Dan Ingram. He was absolutely one of my favorites. We were in a show one time, you know, and he comes out on the stage, and the Jelly Beans were in the, you know, on the show.
Right.
And he comes out, and he introduces the Jelly Beans, and on their way out, he goes, "Sing it, Beans." They were laughing so hysterically they couldn't sing until like the second verse of the song. He just had that. He can make you fall down laughing just like with
that's
one
right.
sentence. Yep, I do remember that.
WABC. 29:03 at WABC. You have the complete and exact and precise station break at this point, please.
WABC, New York.
A masterpiece of understatement.
So, 1977 Radio Personality of the Year. That's a good thing.
Yes, yeah, Billboard Magazine. I'm very proud of that.
Yep.
Very proud of that.
I do know about that. And of course, and then you wended your way to that station with all the reverb, and it was CBS FM. That was around 1985,
yes. You know. 85, that's
and,
right.
And you were on Friday nights, if I remember.
Well, I was actually on across the board, but
right.
I was doing, I went to CBS in April of 85. Joe McCoy called me and asked me,
right.
Don Kirby has gone on taking a vacation day. How'd you like to do the doo-wop shop?
Uh-huh.
And I said, of course. And then the next day, I remember he called me up and said, hey, you sounded great, man. He
yep.
said, Don's taking another day next month in May. You want to come? And the people at RL at the time weren't happy about it. But I was looking to... I was looking to move anyway. I've been there 15 years. I was looking to go.
Yeah.
But I started doing weekends
right
at CBS.
I remember you doing the doo-wop shop. I absolutely remember it. I never missed it, you know.
And then in April, I think it was April. Was it April or so? Well, I started April of 85, but somewhere in the spring
right.
the following year is when I went full-time.
Uh-huh, right.
And I think that's because... Dick Hubbardson left the station.
I went to CW Post with Dick, and I was we were in the same orientation class, and he was on the WCWP station early on, and my wife Paulette was Miss Maryland, Miss USA, whatever. She knew Joey very well. I got very friendly with Dick, and I remember Dick was one of the first ones on CBS to have a female sidekick.
Well, Dick left, and Bob Shannon, who was doing evening, so he went into afternoon drive because Dick was doing the afternoon drive slot.
Right.
And I inherited the evening slot, which was the Hall of Fame. So
right.
on Monday night, I was doing Monday night 70s. Tuesday night was Tuesday night trivia. I was off on Wednesday. Thursday was Thursday night 60s. Friday was Friday night 50s. And then I was doing, I inherited the Top 20 Oldies Countdown when Norman Knight left.
Right.
One of the half dozen times that Norman came and went.
Uh-huh.
And I was doing that. And also I was doing the New York Oldies Party on Saturday night.
Right,
which
right.
ultimately it became Jukebox Saturday night.
So.
And then later on Wednesdays... I was doing Soul of the City, so I was there. Oh, it seemed like around the clock,
right?
8 days a week,
right? So I remember Johnny Z used to do a couple of shows from the White Plains Hotel or something in White Plains, you know, and one of his big claims to fame was that he would sit with Bobby J on Friday nights at CBS.
So, oh, he was there every Friday. He was there. He was my assistant. He was there every Friday.
There you go, Johnny Z. You know, I know Johnny a long time, and he's, you know, of course, on WFAS all these years. And,
right.
You know,
right.
does a great job. It's really funny. Having been on the doo-wop shop so many times with different scenarios and, of course, with Harmony Street, you know, you go upstairs and they have the three microphones there, you know, and you position your group so you're getting the best sound, whatever. And one day we brought our keyboard player in, and Don said, "You're not schlepping that thing in here." And he said, "Yes, we are." It worked out good. But I said, I was singing on the mic all the way to the right. And I said to Don, "Hey, Don, there's lipstick on this microphone." He says, "Oh, I'll explain that." And this was over the air. He says, "You know, Deborah Wetzel does our traffic." He says, That's Deborah's lipstick."
Yes.
And I laughed. I said, as long as it's not Mr. G's, we're okay. That was a true story. I used to see him at the New York marathons all the time, Mr. G. You know?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, Irv would sometimes put his shorts on and,
yeah,
and do that, have a lot of fun with Mr. G, with all you.
And he would say, "Oh, you know, people recognize me." You know, I said, the one thing I used to say to Don, the one thing about radio is that you don't have to dress up for radio. But
that's right.
You know,
a lot of people said we had faces for radio.
Yeah, you got a face for radio. And then, of course, you know, the CBS studio. When you go up there and you spend so much, as much time up there, you know, it's, people fantasize in their own minds, you know, what it's like, you know, where the voice is coming from a certain place and, you know, you're closely mic'd, you know, doing your thing. And they fantasize what the surroundings are about. I'm lucky to say that I know what the surroundings look like on the inside.
Right, right.
You know, it was radio. I wanted to ask you this. So Don had all these jingles. I said to Joe McCoy one time, I says, "You know, what about all the jingles?" And he says, "Don't get me started." And I said, "Why?" I says, "You didn't like the jingles?" He says, "Too many jingles." I said, "You know what? You don't realize how groups used to pray to get their jingle on. And groups used to wait until the jingle came because they were like hit songs to the public, you know, they love it. And we were lucky because Harmony Street did the jingle to Remmalema Ding Dong, and he played the heck out of it. So, you know, I was happy about that. I once said to him, "You should take them all and put them out on a CD." And he said, "Never." He said, "Not," he said, "because I wouldn't want to exploit everybody." And not only that, he said, "I don't have them. The station had them, and I have very few of them." And I said, "You know, that's a crime, because that's almost as bad as WPIX disappearing all of Clay Cole's shows and taping over the shows."
Well, that was a standard practice.
Yeah.
You know, nobody thought that it was worth archiving any of that stuff.
Right. You know, although you'd be amazed if you go to YouTube, which has taken over the world now, how many people have recorded Bobby J over the years?
Recorded.
I mean, you know, it's everywhere, and you hear it coming back at you, and you say, "Hey, I remember that night," or air checks and this and that. People,
somebody put up an air check I listened to maybe a month ago.
Yeah,
and I was, you know, pleasantly surprised and enjoyed hearing it back myself, because that was the days when we were still having fun. That's before they took the fun out of radio, put the fun out of Fun City.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, all over America, they very, very a slow process, but they started losing all of the radio personalities that people, you know, would gravitate to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like tearing out their hearts, because these people were so used to having their music delivered to them by their favorite radio personalities, and then all of a sudden formats changed and whatever. Can we talk a little bit about the CBS debacle, because that broke everybody's hearts in a really big way?
Well, you know, the whole demise of the original concept and format of CBS FM was something that didn't happen overnight.
Right.
It was really thought out and calculated by the suits, by management.
Right.
And we knew in 2002 that something was going to happen. We didn't know what, where, why, or how. But we knew clearly in 2002 that something was going to happen. And it did happen on June 3rd, 2005, when they collectively fired us over the telephone. And it was devised by Madison Avenue.
Right.
Who governs the entire industry of television, radio, even motion pictures. And they decided that the baby boom generation was aging rapidly. And that, albeit they had the largest disposable income, they weren't the desirable demographics. So we got to jettison this. And then on the other hand, it was these personalities that we have here. You know, we're paying them a lot of money.
Right.
Why are they getting paid all this money? And forget the fact that, yes, they do have their pulse, their hand on the pulse of the market and the audience.
Right.
And the audience listens to them, and they didn't care about any of that. They wanted to get rid of they wanted to jettison the whole thing. And that's exactly what they did.
Right.
And CBS FM began the snowball. They opened the door, because right after CBS FM, and what a lot of people don't realize is it was something that happened at all the CBS FM, the CBS O&Os, owned and operated stations.
Right.
In Chicago and other places. They tried it in Philadelphia, but the Philadelphia audience was too strong, and WOGL, the general manager, had to print a mea culpa in the paper that we're sorry, you know, we're bringing it back. Don't worry about it.
Right.
But it started the avalanche. And right after that, all stations began to get rid of their formats, get rid of their personalities.
Wow.
And radio is no longer the same. Now, the young people today, because I hear people, some people are still moan and groan over it, and I keep telling them, hey, it ain't coming back. Forget about it.
Yeah.
But you have a whole generation, maybe generation and a half of people who don't have the same emotional attachment to radio.
Right.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't mean anything to them anymore.
Yeah. No, I know.
And that's what happened. You know, I remember in 2004, right after Joe McCoy left, he was our program director.
Right after he left.
And Dave Logan took over as program director.
Right.
They started to tell us what to say. Public service announcements, no longer could we just do it like we've been doing it since the beginning of time.
Right.
In our own vernacular, in our own style. We had to read them verbatim the way they gave them to us.
Wow.
And, you know, you're having too much fun.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are laughing a lot. Well, we don't want that. We want to be serious, you know. It's bad commentary.
Look, I remember Scott Muni and some of the jocks going to Freedom Land and whatever, and they had so many of their own fans that never mind the groups that were going to appear there, the Del Satins or whoever,
right.
They were coming to see the DJs. Are you kidding?
Absolutely.
I mean, you guys had all, you know, your own body of fans. I mean, you look at Clay Cole. It's very interesting. I had a group called the Islanders. We were on Relic Records. We did the best of acapella. And we were from New Hyde Park, you know. And we used to open up at the World when Murray lost his liquor license and Clay Cole took over the World. We used to open up for Johnny with the Crest when Lois Lee was in the group and the Del Satins. I was at the Cloud Nine I was a regular with the Cloud Nine, and I was there when Johnny used to sing there in the Satins and the whole Brooklyn Bridge thing came about. You know, I was like there. And I say to myself, oh my goodness, I had an interesting thing with Clay Cole. I produced a couple of shows, and we had him as the MC and whatever, and he introduced me coming on stage, and I said to myself, here it is 40-some-odd years later, and it was almost like, I remember when you introduced me at the World, and I did, I have the distinction now, I know what you're going to say, I did Carl Gardner's last interview, I did Speedo's last interview, and I did Clay Cole's last interview. So people have said to me, forget it, man, I'm done.
is this it for me?
No. No. Now we turn that switch, off. The reason I mentioned Johnny is that I know, you know, I met him in 67, I was a kid. I know you had a special relationship with John, and I want you to talk about that.
Well, we known John for a long, long time, and even Stan Krause from Jersey City, who was who owned Square Records in Jersey City and Catamount Records, and the guy that discovered the Persuasions. Stan and I, back in 1974, we did a show at the old Central Theater in Elizabeth, and we were able to get Johnny reunited with The Crest.
Wow.
Where I'm on the JT and Tommy Goff, Dave Hannah Torres. We got them together. And I remember the, as an aside, that particular night, we did two shows. And Johnny was in Brooklyn with the bridge. And we had to get a limousine to ferry him back and forth. But anyway, so John and I just developed a real close friendship.
Hey there, this is J.T. Carter, the original founding member of The Crest, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
1988, a guy named Richard Houlihan, who unfortunately passed away last year, got together with Joel Katz, who I was on the phone with about an hour before I started to talk to you, and he always had a concept of re-recording for now the digital age, many of these classic songs, but sticking true to the original arrangements, but giving them the sound of the digital age. And so it got me and Johnny and Joel, and we started a studio group called Joel and the Dimension.
I remember the project, and of course Joel's a great engineer. He's got great chops.
Devil Ranger, I can't make up my mind which one you are. I'd like to wake up and find Devil Ranger, dear, whichever you are. I miss you, I miss you, I miss you. Please say you'll be mine. Love me or leave me, I'll go out of my mind. Devil or angel, dear, whichever you are, I need you, I need you, I need you. You look like an angel, your smile is divine, but you keep me guessing, will you ever be mine? Devil or angel, please say you'll be mine. Love me or leave me, I may. Devil or angel, do you wish?
just had a real ball.
I'm sure.
And being in the studio with Johnny Maestro was an absolute thrill. We did three projects together because Johnny had the greatest ears of anybody I ever knew.
You bet. Johnny had a sound check. I would make everybody mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah. John and I did the vocal arrangements for that project, the original project. We did Sweetest One,
right.
And we did My Juanita,
right.
And we did 16 Candles,
right.
And John mixed 16 Candles by himself. He uh-huh. wanted that. He said, "Go ahead, man.
That's, right, right."
You got it, and I brought in Al Brown to play piano on the two Joyce tracks,
uh-huh.
and we did another project. Our second project, Johnny did all by himself. He played a lot of the instruments, and we did a Christmas song, which is now becoming almost a perennial Christmas song. All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Right.
It's still in the Dimensions, but Collectibles Records decided to call us Santa's Doo-Wop Helpers.
Yeah.
Take back the holly and mistletoe, silver bells on strings. If I wrote a letter to Santa Claus, I would ask for just one thing. I don't need sleigh rides in the snow. Don't want a Christmas that's blue. Take back the tinsel, stockings and bows, 'cause all I want for Christmas is you. I don't need lots of things.
it can't bring me what I need. 'Cause all I want for Christmas is you.
I spoke to him the night before Johnny Farina was over there. Grace put me on, but he knew, and it was like, oh my God!
It was when I spoke to that, because Grace was being very protective of him.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I know.
But I tried to get a hold of the phone. So finally this night I called him,
right?
And I said, Grace, you know, can't you say, Bobby, go ahead.
Yeah, so, I know.
And we spoke for a few minutes, and I told him how much I loved him. He told me how much he loved me. And I said, look, you got to get better, because we got to get back in the studio. We got some records to make. He says, yeah. He says, I want to do that more than anything else.
Yeah.
He was gone the next week. I have so much love, admiration, and respect for John.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
The thing that got me about John is when they decided to take the bridge down, and they were only working as 4 or 5 pieces. I remember Johnny learning the bass, and I said to him, how the heck do you play staccato bass and still sing Welcome Me Love or The Worst That Can Happen, a flowing melody line? And he says, because I learned the bass like breathing, and I didn't have to think about it so I could get back to like singing. But a lot of people didn't realize how talented the man was.
Right.
We did a lot of shows with them with Harmony Street, because I had the three girls and it kind of didn't bump into each other. But I had Ellen in my group hit most of the high soprano stuff, and she used to bake. And we actually did Newtown High School together. That was, of course, where the shootings occurred, but it was way back, and it was Harmony Street, Brooklyn Bridge. And we did like 90 minutes, but Ellen made a cheesecake. And she left it in the room back there. And we get off the stage, and Freddie and Les and John have cheesecake all over their mouths. He says, I hope you don't mind, we ate the cheesecake. So he said, you know, oh, that's all right. You know, it was for you guys anyway. I says, but, you know, you ate all that cheese. I said, isn't it going to bother you singing? He says, nah, it coats the throat. You know, Johnny with his sense of humor.
They went out there.
Let me tell you. They, he gets off. You know how Johnny had the thing where, where he would walk out on stage and they had to call the mics and the switch was on the bottom and he would forget to turn it on halfway.
Right.
He did that for years and years. So he sings the first tune. He's all gravelly and foggy. He walks off the stage. He says, "It's the cheesecake." They go to do "I Thank the Moon." They crash and burn.
Yeah.
They crash and burn.
Right.
Johnny says, the first time I ever heard him say this, he goes, two things. He says, number one, back in the neighborhood, we always got one do-over. He says, "We're taking ours now." And the place went crazy. And then he says to me, "I heard harmonies do Juanita." He says, "And I realized we've been singing it wrong all those years." So that was John's dry, dry sense of humor. He was hysterical, you know? But, and a lot of people thought, you know, he was like standoffish and full of himself.
Oh,
he wasn't, man.
Not.
He was shy. He was shy.
I told people, I said, John is painfully shy. John, when he is around the people who are closest to him, the people in his circle, I said, this guy is like, he's got a lampshade on his head.
Right.
I said, he was so funny. We used to, even when we were recording, you know, we would be cracking each other up. We'd be laughing and balling tape. And of course, people who saw him on stage, he was so reserved. I said, that's his stage persona.
Yeah.
That is not the real Johnny Maestro.
Right.
And, he was just a fabulous, fabulous individual. You know, I did the recording with the Bridge.
Right.
On
that
double CD. Yeah. You know, and, it was great to be in that contest with Johnny producing me.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
I miss him. I really do.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I talk to J.T. Carter all the time, you know.
Right.
And I'm friendly with him. And, you know, people, they don't know the behind the scenes, you know, how much J.T. loved Johnny, loves Johnny, whatever, you know. So I'm playing a CD, and it's an Anthony and the Imperials a cappella CD, and all of a sudden I hear Bobby J come in and do all the lead-ins for that.
Pure a cappella.
Yep. And so I say to myself, you know, that's a real sweet touch and a nice blend, you know?
Wow. It was a lot of fun. I was on the phone last week, and I couldn't believe it, for 2 hours with Sammy Strain. We were just talking about, any and everything, and I mentioned that. He said, "Man, I've been meaning to tell you, man, I was so happy that you did that."
Right.
And I told him, and I'll tell you,
right.
I said, when Ernest and Clarence told me, you know, they wanted me to do this,
right.
We went to the studio in Queens, and I don't do anything other than a commercial or if I'm doing a narration from a script.
Right.
I said, that was all off the top of my head.
Oh, sure.
I said, we went into the studio and I said, there was a piano and piano bench. And I told Ernest, I said, "You sit right there on the piano bench. You are my audience.
Right.
I am going to be telling a story to you." And that's how that worked.
Wow.
Not one word was written other than I had the track list. I knew the songs that I had to introduce.
Right.
But that's all. I just had to check. Every bit of that was created as you hear it. That's how I recorded it.
Wow. Well, you know.
A lot of fun doing pure acapella.
Right. But, you know, you're a pro. I would expect nothing less, you know. And it's and from the heart, you know, it's from the heart.
Yeah.
Two People in the World is a song written by Ernest Wright and fine-tuned by Richard Barrett. It was the song that the Imperials used to hone their skills, singing it a cappella in Brooklyn, and it is the song that they auditioned with at End Records. And it was a two-sided hit for them, too, as it's the flip side of Tears on My Pillow, the song that they stop every show with, Two People in the World.
There's just two kinds of people in the world. Why can't we fall in love? Just two kinds of people in the world. They are a boy and girl.
Boy meets girl and love begins. Oh, what a feeling you get from within. For I should know, 'cause I'm in love. I'm the boy who told the girl of the stars above.
Just two kinds of people in the world. Why can't we fall in love? Just two kinds of people in the world.
I should know, 'cause I'm in love. I'm the boy who told the girl of the stars above.
Just two kinds of people in the world. Why can't we fall in love? Just two kinds of people.
Anthony and the Imperials are proud to have been label mates of the Flamingos on End Records. They took a song written by Al Dubin and introduced by Dick Powell back in the 1930s in the old Warner Brothers musicals, when they took the old chestnut I Only Have Eyes for You and gave it the doo-bop shabop.
Doo-bop shabop.
Boom, boom, boom.
Doo-bop shabop.
Boom.
Doo-bop shabop.
Boom, boom, boom.
Doo-bop shabop.
Oh,
my love must be a kind of blind love.
Oh,
I can't see anyone but you.
Oh, boom, boom, boom.
Oh,
all the stars out tonight. I don't know if it's cloudy or bright, and I only have eyes for you, dear. The moon may be high, but I can't see a thing in the sky, 'cause I only have eyes for you. I don't know if we're in a garden.
Georgia.
You are here, boom, and so boom, am I.
Georgia.
Maybe millions of people go by, but they all disappear from view. And I only have eyes for you.
Georgia. Georgia.
A funny story, you know, Clarence calls me like every other week, and for the life of me, and I talk to Anthony too, you know, and I talk to George Dassinger all the time, you know, and you know, for the life of me, those two knuckleheads, I say to myself, you know, how did we ever get to the point that Clarence and Anthony don't talk to each other? I said, you know, enough already, you know, Clarence.
It's sad.
It is.
Because, you reach a certain point in your life when you say, hey, look, how much longer do we have to do this?
Right.
Let's just get out there, make some money, have some fun.
Right.
And put all the other stuff behind us. But, you know, I have often said, and, it's not to be misinterpreted that I'm talking about polio, but I say a lot of us have grown up and we suffer from infantile paralysis.
Right.
We never grow up.
Oh, listen, how many groups do you know, and this is true, they're going to take it with them until the last breath, like what somebody said to them 35 or 40 years ago and whatever.
Exactly.
Look how many splinter groups there are. I mean, they're running all over the place. It's like, I have this theory of mine, this little saying that I do. It's called shut up and sing. It's kind of an oxymoron, but it's shut up and sing. Nobody wants to hear your nonsense. You know, just get up and sing good, man. Come on, enough. You know.
You know, never the twain shall meet. I don't think that there's going to be a resolution to that.
No, so, well, you know, Clarence put the Clarence Collins Imperials together, and man, let me tell you, he sent me the stuff. And man, they are awesomely tight. But I think he's realized that if Anthony's down the block singing by himself with a 20-piece band and they have a choice to go to see Clarence Collins Imperials, they're going to make the left-hand turn and go see Anthony. So, you know, I mean, with all good intentions, it's about all those things said all over the years that get in the way of the music, you know.
Right.
And it's crazy. And I know you've seen it 100 times. You did the Letterman show when Johnny was on the Letterman show. I remember that scenario. Yeah.
We did it. And we did that in 87 with Paul Schaefer when the radio was on.
Right.
And, you know, in fact, I looked at that clip the other day. And I looked at Johnny gone and Ellie Greenwich, who I loved.
Right.
You know, she's gone. But I was very impressed with the young kid called the Fresh Prince. I told people, I said, this kid Will Smith, is because he was so nice, he was so warm, so personable. And, I was not surprised when, either later that year or the next year, when he came on with the TV show. Because I knew who he was. You know, I knew, you know, parents just don't understand Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. But, But he had such, the kid lit up the room, you know, he was wonderful and respectful of us old timers, you know.
But he rang all the bells, Will Smith, you know, he did it like in every corner, you know, the movies, the music, you know, the TV thing and whatever. And there are those who have that, you know, talking about Paul Schaefer and Letterman and all of that stuff. I'm going to do a real segue, which is, you know, Terry Stewart's been a good friend of mine because, you know, Harmony Street went to the White House. We were, for Bill and Hillary, we were the entertainment for the 98 Christmas party, and we were lucky.
That's wonderful.
And Terry Stewart saw us on Fox News going in, and he invited us to his New Year's party that year, and I became very friendly with him, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And we talked about Johnny at length, and he said, Johnny is nominated, he said, but, you know, it's like, he says, I only get one vote. He says, and the other thing, the voting machine for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has changed. And I realized that the Bruce Springsteens and Paul Schaeffers and Little Stevies and everything have a lot of influence there. And then it dawned on me why Darlene Love embedded herself into that scenario, because that was her little tunnel way of scooting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
My feeling is
if she's there, the other Lala should be there in the other Crystals. And, you know, not to take anything away from Darlene. Darlene, you know, is on more records than anybody realizes, you know, including Johnny Angel, you know.
That's right.
But I say the
Shoop Shoop song and all
that. Yeah, you know, but all that being said, Johnny always said, it's not a big deal if I don't get in. But I think in his heart of hearts, he would have liked to have had that honor, you know.
Sure, he would have.
But
he deserves to be.
But he's, you know, in the eyes of his fans, he's in his own Hall of Fame. I used to say to him, you're going to be the Phil Rizzuto of the Hall of Fame. They're going to get you in at the last minute, you know.
That's how the teenagers got in, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the baseball writers, the old timers category,
right.
You know.
Right.
The teenagers were nominated for 5 straight years from the inception and didn't get in. And, you know, I thank Cousin Brucey. He was doing a syndicated show called Cruising America.
Right.
And I appeared on it with him, and we broached that. How can all these other people be in and say, I look to Frankie Lyman as my idol inspiration, and he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Right. No, I agree with you.
So that's how he got in. They came up that year with a provision that if you were nominated 5 straight years and didn't get in, in essence, the old-timers block would put you in. And that's how the teenagers got in. And immediately after the teenagers got in, they abolished that. So no one else has ever gotten in with that stipulation.
Well,
but we were grateful that the group got in.
Yeah,
they deserved to be in. Come on.
If anybody deserved to be there, yes. And you know, the other thing is that it's all political, and you and I know that there were guys and groups that shouldn't be there, and there were groups that should be. And so, like anything else, it's become, you know, not what it's supposed to be. As a matter of fact, I got a call from Wally Roker about a month ago, and those guys in California, and they asked me to be on the board of the Doo-Wop Music Hall of Fame, which, of course, I said yes. And, you know, I thought that was nice of them to consider me for that, you know.
And
so I says, does that mean I'm going to have to start collecting my miles now and start flying out to California? They said, no, we conference call.
Right.
But, you know, hey, you know, it's like I said, I love the music and any little part that I can play and do. And I still produce and do. I have been emceeing some of the shows down here in Florida. A bunch of Albanese's shows. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you remember, and I'm going to try to take you back there, Queens College, Colden Hall, it was the first Rob and Laura Albanese show that they ever produced. You were the MC, Harmony Street opened up, Lou Christie closed the show, I think the Excellence, the Token, I mean, a lot of groups there, but
I
do remember that night, and I have a picture of you and I as a matter of fact, backstage, which I might have sent you on Facebook, but if not, I'll send it to you again.
Resend it.
It's an old picture. I have this huge afro, which I called an Isro. I called it a Jewish afro.
It was called an Isro.
You did what some other people did. I know that Lenny Welch did it, and I know that Mel Carter did it, but you were on The Guiding Light, the soap opera.
I was a couple of episodes. I'm what you call a day player.
Uh-huh.
which is just a little bit above being, you know, the dressing where you see people, you know, sitting around and pretending they're talking to one another. Got the same way. Hey, Tom, how you doing today? Oh yeah, and it was fun. I had a great time doing that. Since I remember the first day I went over there, and we did a scene in a gazebo, and it was raining, and me and these other guys who I'd never met before, but we came up and we started to sing Raindrops, the Pete Clark song. And it was so funny, when we got to, we met up the day before some to rehearse it, but when we went to the studio, the other guys had to wait to go through security, but I showed my CBS ID, and I got ushered right in, since it was for the company, since it was for the CBS television network. But that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun, being on Guiding Light, as all the soap operas now, well, there's only the two or three left.
Yeah, well, you know, television has changed. I mean, everything's reality show now. You know, all you got to do is be a little twisted, and you can have a reality show. My wife watches The Housewives of Everywhere. She can I mean, you know. Oh, you know what? Along with that, I wanted to get your feelings on this. How do you feel about American Idol and The Voice as far as, you know, what they have to offer for kids and what they're all about? What are your feelings?
I only watched American Idol a few times.
Uh-huh.
American Idol, for me, the few times that I watched, it was all about the judges.
Right.
You know, particularly the executive producer, Simon Cowell,
when
he was doing it.
Yeah.
The Voice I like.
Okay.
The Voice I like very much. I like America's Got Talent greatly.
Right.
That one, because it's like the old, I like to tell people it's true. In fact, Ben Strain and I spoke about this last week.
Yeah.
How we didn't realize when we were starting, we were in the last days of vaudeville. We appeared on shows that were made up of belly dancers, tap dancers, comedians, ventriloquists, you know, female impersonators.
Right. Like the Apollo, you know, where they dragged you off if you weren't making it, you know.
Oh, that was the Apollo, Puerto Rico had the hook.
Right.
We'll pull you off. But America's Got Talent is like that, where you come on and do whatever it is you do.
Right.
And I find it very, very enjoyable. I like, as I said, I like The Voice. I think it's very, very good. I also like The Sing-Off. That's the acapella.
Right, I remember that.
You know, I particularly was interested when Jerry Lawson was on it.
Jerry and I spoke about that. So he's got a group. He's got that Talk of the Town group that he's got now.
Right.
Well,
so,
you know.
So I think that's good. But in essence, I hate reality shows.
Right.
The only one that I am an unabashed fan of is Celebrity Apprentice and The Apprentice.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
You know, I like that. But the rest of them, you know, I've never watched Survivor. I've never watched The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. You know, I just, you know, I didn't watch the Whitney Houston, Bobby Brown. Kardashians. I've never seen The Kardashians. Don't want to see The Kardashians.
Yeah. But, you know, say what you want about Donald Trump. He took Fred's $40 million that Fred left him, whatever, and turned it into billions. So, you know, whatever they want to throw at Donald, Donald is a genius. And, you know, Donald's a little avant-garde. My father knew Fred very well because my father built high-rise in the city and all of that, you know. And, you know, Donald's a little avant-garde. You know, he's really a genius. You know, he laughs all the way to the bank. So, you know, whatever. The business has changed so much since you started and you were singing and you signed a record contract and you were on the radio. I talk to people and I say, you know, are you going to keep recording? And they say, why should I? You know, I'm going to put a song on iTunes for 99 cents or somebody's going to take it and put it on YouTube. It's like, why should I? Other guys like Mel Carter are recording every 15 minutes. So.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's just a question, I think, nowadays of continuing to be creative because that's what's in your blood. And if the money's going to come, it's going to come. But,
exactly.
You know, now the whole thing is different. I got something for you that's a little bit different.
Light a candle in the chapel, and as you kneel to pray, my heart will be there beside you, although you're so many miles away. I remember every moments when we were so gay. Light a candle in the chapel, for I'm coming home to stay. Once again,
we'll be together
as we were once before, to share the love. Light a candle in the chapel, for darling, I'm coming home.
John Lloyd Young. John was the one that starred in the Jersey Boys movie and won the Tony for playing Frankie. He's a real sweet kid, but he's been doing Frankie for 10 years. So unless he does something, he had on his new CD, Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me. And he went on and on and on about Mel Carter, how he worshipped Mel and whatever. So after the interview, I called Mel. Mel said, get him back on the phone. He says, and introduce me to him, and I'll have a talk with him, and you can edit it into the interview. And so he gets out and says, John, you got another second? I says, you know, I want to introduce you to Mel. And he goes, oh, my God, Mr. Carter. Mel says to him, hey, listen, let's get it straight. My name is Mel. You call me Mel. He says, okay, Mr. Carter. And that was a good piece of radio, because he, you know, 38-year-old John Lloyd Young turned into a 9-year-old kid for a while.
Did you also turn him on to the Sonny Taylor and the Orioles version?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's when I first heard him, when Sonny Taylor did it.
That's right.
Hold me, never let me go under your charm.
Tell me
what I want to know, and then just hold me, make me tell you I'm in love with you.
Hold me tight, never let me go.
Thrill me, walk me down the lane where shadows will be hiding lovers just the same as we'll be when you make me tell you I love you.
I love you.
Yes, they keep telling me be sensible with your new love. Won't be the last you'll find, but they never stood in the dark with you, love. When you take me in your arms and drive me slowly out of my mind, oh, kiss me,
miss me, miss me. If we ever see that door, so kiss me, make me tell you I'm in love with you.
Girl, they told me to be sensible with your new love. Don't be fooled, thinking this is the last you find. But they never stood in the dark with you, love. When you grab me in your arms and slowly drive me out of my mind.
Kiss me, and when you do, I know that you will miss me, miss me. If we ever say I do, so kiss me, kiss me. Make me tell you I'm in love with you.
Don't ever let me go.
Well, you know, it's really funny, you know. I did a show, I emceed a show the other day with the Clovers, you know, and it's amazing right. How many people don't know that they were original versions of Tune. Look at the thing that Jimmy Keys used to cry about all the time when he used to do Career Day and talk to a full auditorium. He said, we wrote this great tune that died on the R&B charts and the Crew Cuts mm-hmm. went and re-recorded it and made all the money and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
He said, and how do you think we felt about it? They took our stuff, they treated us, you know, and really and truly, those guys were the legends, not the groups that came and covered it, but that was the crime of those days. And I don't know if the business has changed for the better, you know?
Well, it's just well you different. Have to consider
yeah.
What business are you talking about? The record business
yeah.
doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly. Well, let's say the music business. The lawyers are controlling it. They're signing the acts now.
I mean, when I think about it, and I'm happy and I'm blessed that I came along at a time when you had retail stores.
Right.
You had mom and pop stores.
Right.
They're gone. We had distributors. They're gone. We had people who came to the radio stations every week. Promotion people. They're gone.
Right.
You know, it's all changed. I remember the first time the Lappers and I went into the studio and the band wasn't there. And we were shown two boxes of tapes and said, well, what's that?
Right.
Said, well, that's the band. First time we recorded with tracks.
Right.
It was different in that we were no longer able to be spontaneous.
Right.
Because, because if we wanted to get an inspiration from one of the musicians, well, that's not going to happen because it's already done.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that's missing that people don't think about. When we have these reissues on CD and you would listen to studio chatter, you
right.
listen to them, you don't have studio chatter anymore because nobody's there.
Right.
You know, because when you, they used to keep the tape running, so you would get alternate tapes, multiple tapes.
Right.
Now you go back to the head and you start all over again. So there are no, you know, it's the whole thing.
Well,
radio, records, motion pictures. I mean, I look at Turner Classic Movies. I watch Turner Classic Movies all day long.
So do we.
And I leave it on when I sleep.
Yep.
Because I don't need to see a woman take off her clothes.
I hear you.
You know, I want to see the camera pan to the sky and the strings begin to swell.
Yes.
And I use my imagination
right.
and I see what they're doing in my mind's eye.
Right, right, right.
But, you know. It's all changed. Everything is changed.
Well, as they say, you know, and my wife and I, too, because, hey, listen, I met my wife 8 years ago, and she changed my life, and I was just running around Florida,
uh-huh.
you know, in between marriages and whatever, and she's been a godsend to me. But when I walked into her house for the first time, she had a 57 Seberg jukebox, and I fell
wow.
in love even more deeply, and it was all filled with vinyl. you know,
right.
and good ones. So,
yeah,
you know, I
yeah.
says, wow, you know, it's like when they like the same music, that makes it even better, you know.
Absolutely.
But yeah, we like the old movies too.
Da, 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 da.
one that always be. Every time she passes me by, she's the one that I catch in my eye.
She's the one that I love so.
Now, you're still, of course, on the radio and have a show at this point.
Yeah, I'm on the internet now.
Well, you know, I said to Don K. Reed right after CBS folded, I said, you know, why don't you go to Sirius? Why don't you go to the internet? And he said, nah, I'm a purist. I'll never do that. And, of course, Warren from the Belmonts hooked him into doing, internet. But, you know, that's where it's all gone. And,
of course.
And that's where the baby boomers are finding their music. And it's amazing. I'm on about 8 or 10 different stations, and I'm getting heard, and I know that you are too. People that want to find Bobby J are finding Bobby J. How can they find you?
We are on RadioMaxMusic.com. One word, RadioMaxMusic.com. I'm on Saturdays and Sundays. I do it's called Greatest, I can't think of the name of my show, but Great Soul Performances. It's a show that I started in England.
Huh.
Right after I left CBS FM. You talk about Dick Heatherton, Bob Shannon, and myself, right. The old CBS old-timers. We were on a satellite called VIP Radio,
okay,
out of London, and that's where the show was born. However, they were great, great people, really, really passionate, particularly about Northern Soul music, but they didn't really have their hand on the pulse of how to sell it. They needed a great sales staff who could hit the ground running. That didn't happen. So within a year, the satellite was done. And that's when I got a call from Ron Kovacs at Radio Max Music.
Right.
You know, would you like to bring that show here? And it's primarily a soul show based a lot on the Soul of the City show that I did on WCBS FM.
Wow.
That encompasses, of course, the 60s, the 70s, 80s. I'll play new stuff. I mean, I love playing Pharrell, William Taffy,
right,
stuff like that. And usually my last song at the end of the show is a two-hour show. Would be a doo-wop song.
Gotcha.
You know?
Gotcha.
And a year ago, Kovacs came and said, I want to do another version of the song, but the 80s. So I do one called Great Soul Performances to the 80s. On Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time,
right,
there's a repeat of the previous Sunday's Great Soul Performances 2.
Gotcha.
At 7 o'clock on Saturday, it's the new great soul performances. Next day, Sunday at 5 p.m., it's the new 80s show.
Gotcha.
Followed at 7 o'clock by a repeat of the night before's 7 o'clock great soul performances show. So Saturday and Sunday, I'm on for 4 hours.
Wow.
Between 5 and 9 p.m. and enjoying it. And people were surprised when I tell them I'm having a ball with the 80s
yeah.
show because I didn't play that music. For me, it's like a discovery.
And the other thing is, you have nobody telling you what to say and what to play.
Totally.
Exactly. And I think that's, you know, the beauty of it. I was shocked when Sirius, all of a sudden, the next day, all the 50s DJs were gone. And
yes,
that was, you know, guys like Norman Knight and what, you know, Brucey was on 60s, so he didn't get affected.
Yeah.
But I know that because Bobby B's show was pre-recorded, they kept his, you know.
Right.
You know, whatever.
But I'm not surprised. You know, I worked at Sirius prior to it becoming known as Sirius XM.
Right.
I worked there from 07 to 08. I worked on Soul Town.
Right.
And Soul Town was then Soul Town 53. I was also the voice of the channel. I did all the
all the
promos, and I did the sweepers, and I did all of that. And then at some point, I got a call that right after the merger with XM, and it became Sirius XM, that they were going to have to let me go because I was Bobby J, I was getting a few dollars more than the other people. And they said that that was the reason they were going to let me go. Because I was making more money than everybody. And I said, are you kidding?
Right.
Are you kidding? You know? I said, well, keep the money. You know, it doesn't matter. And they said, no. Nah. Because, you know, I've been around long enough to know the decision was already made.
Right.
So, and then they moved down to, now Sirius is on Channel 49.
Right.
So I wasn't surprised when I heard that they had eliminated it. Because Sirius XM years ago went the way of so-called terrestrial radio.
Correct.
I was surprised when I started working at Sirius that they had like focus groups, and they had listeners call outs that they would get people on the phone and play songs for them and get them. Wait a minute, this is what they did on terrestrial radio.
Right.
Satellite was supposed to be different.
Right.
But it's not. It's not.
Well, you know, from what I understand from car manufacturers and whatever, that it's not going to be too long before everything is going to be Wi-Fi. All radio is going to be like internet radio. The cars will have, you want jazz, you hit jazz. It's all Wi-Fi. You get like 140 choices around the world. And Sirius is going to be licking their bootstraps, you know, trying to figure out what's going on too. And terrestrial radio is going to take a back seat. But I do know that Sound Exchange and all that, the government is really trying to get a grip on internet radio, and they can't figure out how to do it yet because it's such a new puppy. You know, it's like,
well, yeah, but they're trying to kill it in that.
I know.
We had a problem at Radio Max maybe 3 years ago.
Right.
When the, a little, perhaps, back room, a little collusion going on between the Record Industry Association of America and the terrestrial radio station.
Right.
They were taking the internet radio station and charging them a licensing fee, which was three times higher.
Exactly.
Than the terrestrial radio station.
Exactly. But I know that because I've been doing this show for about 7 years.
Still internet radio.
They'll never squash this because it's too big. And you want to know something? The guys that really do it well will see it through, and the guys that kind of don't do it that well, they'll fall off by the wayside, you know.
Right.
Whatever. And you know, I do it because I love to still stay creative, and I love to.
Right.
And I've done some interviews, you know, like Johnny Mathis, you know, Be Still My Heart, you know, he was great for 2 hours, and some that really warmed me. I've been thinking about calling you for a long, long time, and I'm really glad that I got a chance to talk to you and get inside of Bobby J a little bit about the business, you know, to find out what you think about all of this and to hear about how you felt about your career.
I am still in the game. And two, I'm still singing.
Right.
Not singing as much as I want, but I always keep irons in the fire. I love doing studio work. My last major studio project was the Aaron Neville My True Story.
Oh yeah, album. Well, I talk to Eugene all the time. I guess you were involved in that.
And Dickie Harmon was on it. We had a good time doing that. So I'm still doing that.
Two lovers that I knew well. Now they must cry, cry, oh, their blues away. Cry, 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 cry. Their blues away. Her name was Sue, yeah. His name was Earl. His love was Lorraine. Such a wonderful girl. Now they must cry, cry, oh, their blues away. Their blues away. Love will make you happy. Love will make you cry. Love will make the tears fall when your lover says goodbye. And they must cry, cry, oh, their blues away. Story and yeah, and it was no lie. Names have been changed here to protect you and I.
I wake up in the morning and I thank God for waking me up every morning, and I'm still able to breathe and have mobility. I'm going to be in this game in some way.
I want to leave you with this, yeah,
and leave your listeners with this. As we talked about the changing technology and the way that we receive our music, I heard yesterday that Hyundai, the 2016 model cars,
right,
you will not be able to play CDs.
Ooh.
They are no longer. And I'm sure as Hyundai goes, the other car manufacturers will probably go the same way.
Well,
so what we are wondering is, how are we going to hear our own music in the car?
Right. If
we can only get the terrestrial radio stations that survive and the satellite radio stations that survive, and the internet radio station. Well, what if I want to play my own music in the car.
Right.
How can we do that?
Right.
What are we going to do with our CD collection?
Well,
that many of us travel with.
You know how they do that, you know, when they want to switch to something else and leave you with all the, you know, stacks of CDs that you have. But I do know now, I have a Ford Flex, and I do know that you can now, you can store music on the hard drive in there. So I think, you know, some of these have little USB ports in the glove compartment. Maybe you have to, you're going to have to put your music on a little stick, put it into the USB, and upload it into your hard drive in the car so they'll bypass the CD thing. That could be.
Well, that's possible because many of the flash drives are capable of playing up to and maybe even exceeding 16 gigabytes.
Oh, yeah.
Which is enough music to take you from, you know, a long, long way.
Yeah, from Boca Raton all the way back up to Jersey.
That's right, you know, but it's something to think about, something to contemplate.
What would you say to fans that were with you all the way at the beginning back in WWRL and followed you through CBS and are still with you now? What would you say to those people?
I am so grateful that you've, and many of them I still hear from, that you've been with me all this way. I haven't changed. In fact, I think with each and every year, although the body gets older, that as far as the talent and the way that I do things, I think I've gotten better. Because thanks to internet radio, I can keep my chops up. I haven't lost anything. Haven't lost my edge. And we will see each other again.
Bobby, it's been great. Thank you so much for spending time with me. This is the real Bobby J, you know, his loves, his life, and his entire career, and he's still doing it after all these years with his distinctive, beautiful baritone tones. Thank you so much, Bobby.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for having me, and all the best to you in the future going forward, and I hope that 2015 is a great year for all of us.
Thanks. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
One of my favorite songs was written by a neighbor of mine, Raul J. Cita. Cita is the writer and arranger for the Harp Tones. My favorite song is a song that's been done by Manhattan Transfer and a few other people. And now, Little Anthony and the Imperials give it their spin with that wonderful four-part harmony. And fellas, I see, that's the way it goes.
Boom, 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 boom.
Ah, ah. Ah, ah, I still remember the day that we met. Your smile was something I'll never forget. And since that day, my love grows and grows.
That's the way it goes,
the way it goes. I spent a lifetime just waiting for you, and from now on, dear, my waiting is through, and you can make all my dreams come true.
And that's the way it goes.
From out of nowhere,
you came into view.
Now I'm
completely
in
love with you.
Without doubt, I spent a lifetime just waiting for you.
Boom, 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 boom.
And from now on, dear, my waiting is through, and you can make all my dreams come true.
And that's that's the way it goes.
From out of nowhere, you came into view. Now I'm completely in love with you. You walk right in, my heart walked out. You took its place without doubt. So won't you please open your heart to me? For since I've known you, you're all that I see. You are the one girl that my heart has chosen, and that's the way it goes.
Hey, Mike, John Mathis.
Hey, John, how are you?
Okay, thanks. It's Johnny Mathis, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
CBS FM, walla walla bing bang. Ooh ee, ooh ah ah, ting tang, walla walla bing bang.
Oh boy, that's the language we learned back in 58 from David Seville. It's 9:12 in the Hall of Fame, Friday Night 50s with Bobby J. And the Hall of Fame is sponsored in part by your greatest city, Oldsmobile Dealers.
The heat is on.
Staten Island's tropical paradise is hot.
Coconut.
Catch the fever.
See and feel the difference.
Coconuts excites your nights.
A captivating new concept in nightlife entertainment.
Expect the unexpected.
Turn on your nights and turn up the heat. Coconuts.
The adult nightclub Staten Island's been waiting for is here. Coconuts.
Tropical elegance, Wednesday through Saturday. Now, it's Coconuts.
6:30 Midland Avenue, Staten Island. Minutes from the Verrazano Bridge. Valet parking available.
Dress to impress. 718-667-9828.
Coconuts excites your night.
See and feel the difference.
Your fantasy comes true tonight, Fantasy Night, when the weekend party begins. Gentlemen 25 and over, ladies 23 and over. Coconuts, 718-667-9828. 59 and Hushabye, a great Doc Pomus Mort Cuban song in 101.1. CBS FM, hi, who's this?
Hi, Bobby, I'm Nancy Hildebrand, calling you from Denville, New Jersey.
Oh, down in Denville,
yes.
Where the old New Jersey Transit train goes.
How about that?
What can I play for you?
May I please hear 16 Candles by The Crash?
Sure you can. Who do you want to send it out to?
I'm sending this song out to anybody who is 16 years old today.
Like me!
And they like it. Yes, how about that? And I wish I was 16 again. I'm going to be 37 next Saturday.
Wow! Well, a premature happy birthday.
Oh, thank you!
All right, here are The Crests, coming up at 101.
Thanks a lot, Bobby.
Happy birthday!
there. The song was done by quite a few folks, including the late Ricky Nelson. It's Fats Domino, 1957. I'm walking at 101.1 as we play this great music. It's 922. I'm Bobby J. And parents, you can help protect your child against sexual abuse. The New York State Health Department says teach your child to say no to an abuser. To learn how, write Say No, Box 2000A, Albany, New York, 12220. CBS FM, with you in mind.
McDonald's Double Cheeseburger is back for a very short time, so you better order quick.
Double cheese, double burger, cheeseburger, please.
Hurry, fast.
I can do this.
It just won't last. McDonald's double cheeseburger is back.
Double burger, cheese, double burger, please.
Get right up. Clear your throat for clean.
Double bubble cheese, bubble burger, cheese, please, burger.
If at first you don't succeed, try.
Again and again and again and again. To all the patties, sizzling and hot. Golden melted cheese, go on, give it a shot.
Okay, double cheese, double cheeseburger, please. double cheese, double cheeseburger, please. Double cheese, double cheeseburger, please. Yeah! And a Cola Coca!
It's a good time for the great taste of McDonald's.
Hurry, it's only for a limited time at participating McDonald's.
Now try this. Double cheeseburgers for only 99 cents. I know this is a mouthful you can handle. Try it. Double cheese, double cheeseburger, please, for only 99 cents. But it's only through February 22nd, so hurry. Offer good at participating McDonald's in New York, New Jersey, and Fairfield County, Connecticut. Prices may vary plus tax.
Say, if you missed the grand opening of Chevy's, you're nowhere.
Well, shake it up, baby, now.
Shake it up, baby. Yeah.
Chevy. Chevy's open Wednesday through Saturday. Let the good times roll with the music of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. My favorite 55 Chevy sitting at the front door at the original Chevy's on Sunrise. It's nonstop bop to the wee hours, if you know what I mean. Chevy's in the Key Largo Shopping Center, Sunrise Highway, West Islip, where parking's never a problem. Proper attire always. Chevy's 516-669-2427. Chevy's on Sunrise. Be there or be square.
Relive those old but goodies and enjoy a complimentary gourmet smorgasbord till the wee hours. It's nonstop bop tonight at Chevy's on Sunrise. 516-669-2427. Weekend 101 weather just ahead of the Rays and silhouettes. Clear and cold overnight. Lows in the 20s in Midtown. Teens to the north and west. Tomorrow, sunshine followed by afternoon cloudiness. High near 40. It's clear right now and 33 at 101.1. By the Rays at 927 with Bobby J. And this is going out from Bobby to Cindy, who wishes that Cindy would come back soon. 1959, Nate Nelson, the Flamingos.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
I waited so long.
worried me so. Mother-in-law,
mother-in-law,
every time I open my mouth, well, this is trying to put me out. Oh, how could you stoop so low? Mother-in-law,
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 Satan should be her name. Mother-in-law,
mother-in-law,
to me they're about the same. Mother-in-law,
mother-in-law,
if she leave us alone, oh, we'll have a happy home. Sent from down below, mother-in-law,
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 mother-in-law.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Frankie's brother, Mr. Louis Lyman.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Are you having a good time? I know that. So am I. You know, I really admired my brother Frankie, hence began to sing too. And one of the first recordings that we made back in the days, along with the Teen Chords, went something like this.
Oh,
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be, remember all the love we found on Harmony Street. Open up your heart, recall how it used to be.